using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 14th of June, year of our Lord, 2021, day 457 of America Held Hostage. Well, today we're going to take a look at what is happening at the G7. Yes, we've been locked down for a year to accomplish all of the Green New Deal proposals, the UN 2030 agenda, and now they're trying to lock in permanently, lockdown at the G7. That and much more. Stay with us. Well, as we look at what is happening with the G7, and let me first begin by the coincidence. There are so many coincidences, and here's another coincidence. We have a lot of coincidental suicides, of course, surrounding the Clintons, and now we have another one, the reporter, who broke the information about what was happening with Hillary Clinton's, with Bill Clinton, meeting on the tarmac with then the Attorney General, Lynch, as they were removing and downgrading, I should say, but, you know, they were essentially removing it, but downgrading the charges against Hillary Clinton for violating national security in a way that nobody else has ever been even accused of. I mean, the magnitude of it, first of all, and the level of it. So it's the quality of information that she exposed, above top secret, and then the quantity of it. And yet what they were doing right after that meeting, you had Comey announcing that the Bureau would not press charges against Hillary just days later than that meeting on the tarmac that was reported by the reporter. And he got that scoop. It was an excellent find and something that was a big embarrassment to Hillary Clinton, probably had a lot to do with her loss. They downgraded it from gross negligence to being careless. You know, mistakes were made. But again, the quantity of what was turned over, the level of what was turned over, and the very fact that she cannot plead ignorance or maybe incompetence because she is at the very top of the organization. So we all know what it was. We all know that this is basically by putting it on ClintonEmails.com. This is essentially like a dead drop for people who had already paid to play. So you can go find the stuff there, and she can claim that she didn't have anything to do with it. And what we saw with this, what we saw with the DNC leaks, of course, was that they would move you to who was it that exposed this, right? Who was it? It was this reporter who's now dead. And he said over the last year he had received a lot of death threats, harassments, things that had his credit cards hacked and had to use code words for his children. This is a kind of level of harassment. These people don't forget. They continue to come after you because here we are more than 4 years later, and they eventually catch up. And I think that is exactly what's going on. We all know what's going on with that. But when you take a look at the Clinton emails and the DNC hacking, what they did not want you to see was the truth about Hillary Clinton. So what they did was they refocused everybody to the idea, who released that? Oh, it must have been the Russians. And I've talked many times about how that was literally a red herring. Yeah, it's the the Ruskies that did it. Don't pay attention to that. Who released this information? Now they're doing the same thing about ClimateGate. The BBC has produced a drama about ClimateGate. that portrays these lying, dishonest scientists as the victims of hacking. Now, these are the people, I know a great deal about this because I was involved with an organization that was trying to expose one side, the American side, of ClimateGate. You had at the University of East Anglia in the UK, you had a lot of scientists there who were passing information back and forth saying, our models don't work. We have to hide the fact that we're actually getting a temperature decline and not an increase. So it's not tied directly to CO2. It's not going up exponentially. As a matter of fact, it's declining. So we've got to figure out a way how we're going to spend this data. And above all, we've got to hide the data from them. And you had an American scientist who was participating in that, who was working at the time at the University of Virginia, and and he was the guy who came up with the hockey stick that was used by Al Gore in his lying documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. It was a convenient lie. And one of the principal lies was this hockey stick that was put together by Mann. Now, Mann, we wanted to try to get to his emails. And, of course, he fought the emails, saying, that's my private stuff. You can't see it. We pointed out that he'd created that information while he was being employed by the state, by the University of Virginia, that the conclusions that he had drawn, his scientific papers, had already been published. There was no issue of violating any intellectual property rights. He'd already published it all. And those published papers had been used to craft public policy. And so after all of that has happened, we'd just like to know, can we see your data? The same type of thing that you're seeing with Fauci, and exactly what this is. They have now just gone with the same agenda, as I pointed out. I've seen this over and over again. I've seen for years how CDC and Fauci have pushed people with disinformation about the flu, how they padded the numbers, how they padded the number of test cases and so forth to try to influence and pressure people to get the flu shot. This time they just did it in a much, much bigger way. And the details of what they want to implement are part of the Green New Deal. So they just pulled out, again, the climate alarmism and put in virus alarmism or pandemic alarmism. And the tactics that they use to push their pseudoscience, their false science, believe me, because I have these titles and I'm at this prestigious university, and you just do what I say because I am science, and you're not allowed to question me. You're not allowed to see my data. What scientist, real scientist, is afraid to show the data? Right? That tells you they're liars. And it tells you that the government is hiding that. Now, when that came out at the University of East Anglia, and it was because of whistleblowers there, they said, you need to see these emails. And so people sued, just like we sued Mann at the University of Virginia. And just like in the U.S., the British courts covered up for that. They said, no, you can't see the emails. We're going to keep them confidential. And so after a while, they turned up on a Russian server. See, it's those terrible Russians telling us the truth about our criminals in government. And yes, the Russians have ulterior motives for showing the criminality of our government. But it's good that we know it anyway, isn't it? I mean, don't you want to know the levels and details of these crooks who are running our government? And so it showed up on a Russian server. It was about 1,000 emails. And then they had a ClimateGate 2 sometime after that where they had, I think it was another 5,000 emails. So we saw all of this. But now it's not that these people are lying to us to impose an agenda of climate alarmism and to take everything from us, which is what the Great Reset was all about. When they put that in 2015, it was all about climate alarmism. That was why they were going to take everything from you, why you would own nothing, why you would go nowhere, why you would not have a home, you would not be able to eat meat. All of that agenda was because of climate alarmism. And they just replaced it. The date of 2030 that they used for the Great Reset, the date that they used for Agenda 21 when they renamed it UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability. It wasn't for pandemics. And so now at G7, they're trying to lock all of that in place. But before we get into that agenda, I just want to say, as we look at how they have lied to us, how they have concocted this climate alarmism, the plandemic alarmism. And you look at what is happening with Julian Assange. At the beginning of this, you had 24 members of parliament in the UK, because Biden is there. That's where they're having the G7. And what they were saying was that they were appealing to Biden to let Julian Assange go. It's like, well, wait a minute. He's in a British prison, right? No. He's in a British prison because the American government wants him there. And the incarceration, the torture, the attempted murder, and of course they probably will murder him if he doesn't get out, of Julian Assange is a litmus test. A litmus test for both Trump and for Biden. And it tells us two things. Well, actually it tells us three things. Two primary things. Number one, do they support free speech and a free press? And we know the answer to that is definitively no. If you're going to lock up the one person who's told us the truth about Hillary Clinton, who's told us the truth about these other issues, no, they do not support the free press. And the second thing that it tells us is that they are subservient to the U.S. intelligence state. The intelligence state. The people who are running our government, folks, are the people at the CIA, the NSA, this vast collection of intelligence agencies. They're the true government, have been for quite some time. And they tell Trump what to do, they tell Biden what to do. You know, Trump benefited greatly from what Julian Assange did. Assange said, well, we don't know what Trump is, but we do know that Hillary Clinton is a criminal and a warmonger. So here's the truth about Hillary Clinton. And we'll have to see about Trump. Well, now we know about Trump. And interestingly enough, it was Julian Assange that was a key factor in exposing, I think, Trump early on, even before what happened last year, where he became a tool of the entire global, an obvious tool of the pharmaceutical companies, the Great Reset, Davos, all these people. No doubt about it. And it's been kind of interesting when I was at InfoWars to see, first of all, the lies about QAnon from Jerome Corsi. Yeah, you see, this is going to, according to the quatrains that we got from QAnon, Julian Assange is going to be released, and he's going to be released to Switzerland. See, it says red and white, and the bird has flown, and yada, yada. No. Not true at all. All the way up to the very end, to the 11th hour, to the point where Alex Jones was saying, well, I know that Julian Assange is going to get pardoned at midnight, January the 19th. Very last thing that President Trump does. He's going to stick it to him because he's very afraid of those guys who are really the true government, the intelligence services. But he's on our side. He really is. He's a George Washington, and he's going to take care of all this stuff, and he's going to free him and put him out there. Look, folks, what is being done to Julian Assange is criminal. Everybody knows, if they pay any attention to this, that this is really being done at the behest of the intelligence state. And when I say the intelligence state, understand we're talking about the Five Eyes. Understand how closely allied the UK and the US are. If we're both countries are being run by the intelligence agencies, then it makes perfectly good sense that they would be doing this type of thing. And that is exactly what is happening. The letter points out, the letter from these 24 members of parliament, points out that as vice president in 2011, Biden opposed Assange's prosecution. You, like us, must have been disappointed when your predecessor launched a prosecution carrying a 175-year sentence against a globally renowned publisher, wrote the MPs. Who was his predecessor? Who was it that was the predecessor of Biden? That's right. It was Trump. It was Trump. Trump, who launched a persecution of Julian Assange. 175-year sentence. They said our countries are increasingly confronted with the contradiction of advocating for press freedom abroad. Oh, yeah, we're very upset when you have censorship in other countries, right? We don't care about it when it happens in the U.S. and the U.K. Why? You want to see the connection between these two. Just take a look at what happened with the coup against Trump, the attempted coup against Trump, the first one. And what was that? I've talked about that many times. It was the London-Langley axis, Langley, where the CIA is headquartered. Look at Gina Haspel and these other people, the Steele dossier that came out, all of that was going back and forth between London, the CIA in London, and what was happening in the U.S. They have worked together to come after Trump. Then they worked together after, I guess they taught Trump a lesson, to come after Julian Assange, after they had flipped him, if he was ever, in fact, on a different side. So, freedom abroad while holding Mr. Assange for years in the UK's most notorious prison at the request of the U.S. government. And who would that U.S. government be? Again, the CIA and their associated groups. Then that brings us to the essence of the G7. Taking away coal, taking away individual cars, and instituting everything in the Great Reset, the Green New Deal, the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability, all of this. Because, if you expose the lies of these climate scientists, they're the victims. If you expose the lies of Hillary Clinton, she's the victim. And you don't look at what's in her emails. And you don't look at what's in ClimateGate either. You just go by the pronouncements, and these people are going to use this to lock in their lockdown control of our society. They said, we're going to have to phase out gasoline and diesel cars. Host Boris Johnson said the G7 wanted to, quote, drive a global green industrial revolution to transform the way we live. Make no doubt about it. They want to do this all, of course, by 2030. That is when they will have their new society imposed. And again, taking advantage of the cyclical nature of societies and the fact that we will have a reset of society one way or the other, either for the better or for the worse by 2030. And this is their agenda. We've already gotten a big taste of it this last year. Do you like that? Well, it's going to get even worse with the climate alarmism. And that's the focus of what is happening right now with the G7. Quote, there is a direct relationship between reducing emissions, restoring nature, creating jobs, and ensuring long-term economic growth. That's right. And the climate agenda is designed to destroy all of those. I think Babylon Bee summed it up the best. Headline. People who ruined the world's economies gather to discuss how to fix the world's economies. The people who destroyed everything. Now they're going to fix it all. Now what they're going to do is fix it in place. Fix it in place. According to sources, says the Babylon Bee, the people who ruined the world's economies by promoting lockdowns, economic shutdowns, and printing cash have gathered in the UK this week to discuss how to fix the world's economies. We assure you, we've got a great plan to fix everything. Trust us. When have we ever been wrong about anything? Well, actually, they weren't wrong about anything. We just understand now, I hope, what their agenda is. From Boris Johnson and Joe Biden to Justin Trudeau and the weird French guy. And then this other headline from Babylon Bee. The world's economy saved as a giant crack in the earth swallows up all G7 conference attendees. Witnesses reported feeling a low rumble beneath their feet as Joe Biden, Justin Trudeau, Angela Merkel, and others gathered on the green grass for a photo op before it swallowed them up and closed up again. If only that would happen. Yeah, if only that would happen. World governments have assured their citizens they will continue the important work of building back better for everyone. American citizens will be mourning the terrible loss this weekend with backyard barbecues. Yes, because if we don't stop these people, they will stop our barbecues. Seriously. I mean, they are absolutely serious about this. Going back to 2013, if you recall, when fine particulate matter, PM 2.5 was all the rage with the EPA, when you had then Obama EPA Director Lisa Jackson in a staged little dog and pony dialogue with Markey, who was a congressman at the time, now a senator. And she was actually telling the country through this hearing that that more people were dying of fine particulate matter 2.5 than of cancer. She seriously said that. Now, that was patently absurd. It was as absurd as the death report. So we've gotten this last year about the pandemic. Do you see how this all matches up? Do you see why it wasn't any big deal for me to understand where this was going a year ago? I mean, from the bioweapons labs to the narratives about how we're all going to die, to the prescriptions on how on what will save us, not even to mention 20 years of simulations for this exact same thing. Lock people down with draconian measures and rush a vaccine out there without any testing. No therapeutics. So it was very clear. The most amazing thing was at the very time she was doing that, telling everybody that lie that fine particulate matter was killing more people than cancer. And do you know what that is? Fine particulate, that's 2.5 microns, any matter that's that. And what they were targeting at the time was primarily diesel. But they were also coming for fireplaces, for barbecues, all of that. And if you went to the EPA site, it got even more Babylon Bee-like because they had a picture of the Smoky Mountains as an example of fine particulate matter. When you see the smoke in the Smoky Mountains, it has absolutely nothing to do with diesel exhaust, with coal power plants. It was always the Smoky Mountains before there was any industrialization there. Flat out lie and fear mongering. But the worst part about it was at the same time she was telling everybody that it was killing more people than cancer, they were conducting experiments right there where I was in Research Triangle Park, the EPA there, conducting experiments. They searched for people who had respiratory and heart issues. They hooked them up directly to exhaust from a diesel engine. They removed the carbon monoxide so they wouldn't kill them outright. But they wanted to have them have issues and to react to that. And Steve Malloy found that, saw some reports of people being taken out who had had reactions to that. They come in with breathing issues, and then they expose them to fine particulate matter in very high concentrations. As a matter of fact, it was 72 times higher than what the EPA would allow. And so we looked at that and we said, well, one of two things is true. Either you're completely lying to us about the dangers of fine particulate matter, or you ought to go to jail. Because if you seriously believe that at the levels that you have put this, we have people dying. She's very clear. I'm not saying they're getting sick. They're dying. If you believe that, and then you expose people to 72 times that in your own experiments, then you're criminal. And these people are criminal. And then, of course, the judge said, when we said, you need to stop this under the Nuremberg Code, sounds like the vaccine stuff, doesn't it? The judge said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to continue on with that. So it's actually kind of crazy what they're doing. Of course, you see the typical kinds of hypocrisy about the lockdown that's happening here. No masks, no distancing. Pull this up, Travis. No masks, no distancing. The disgraceful COVID hypocrisy of the G7 elite at Breitbart. You can see the pictures of these people. When they pose for the pictures, they're all spread out. But then when the camera is off of them, they're hugging, they're kissing. Note how the personal rules on mask wearing and social distancing, quarantining, and so on differ quite markedly from the ones they've been imposing on us ordinary folks over the last 18 months. Sure, when they're posing for one of their stage photographs, they all pretend for propaganda purposes that they're COVID regulation compliant. But look what they do later. Scroll down, the next one, and show Macron with his arm around Biden. Keep going down, yeah. You see that and a little bit further down. I said, the president, first lady, the queen, Prince Charles, all clearly in breach of the arbitrary 2-meter social distancing rule. None of them, of course, is wearing masks. As Nolte at Breitbart says, I personally have no objection to seeing a 95-year-old widow chatting to a slightly confused-looking elderly gentleman and his wife at a cocktail party. Something about the queen and Biden. Without being encumbered with ridiculous masks, what I do very much object to is the extraordinary mix of arrogance, double standards, and muddled thinking on display here among our governing elite. For example, if the Queen is allowed to socialize without a muzzle now, what was the point of subjecting her to that ordeal a few weeks ago of having to sit masked, and isolated without the comforting proximity of her loved ones at her beloved husband's funeral. Exactly. They had her sitting on a bench by herself, all masked up. It's simply messaging. It's simply propaganda. And if COVID is still such a clear and present danger that it justifies the continued theft of our freedoms by the state, then how come we're prepared to place our beloved world leaders in an encounter scenario so risky that any of them could catch this most deadly bug and die at any time? It almost makes you wish that this pandemic was real, doesn't it? It'd be as good as the earth swallowing up and taking them out. We'll be right back.
The common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, we're going to play a little bit of a game here. We're going to try to determine which one is the real Boris Johnson and which one is the parody. So now, no peeking. Those of you who are doing the watching the video, you'll know. But for those of you who are listening to the audio, this could be a really difficult test. So here is Boris Johnson A. Is this a real Boris Johnson or is this a parody?
And the president of South Africa, as I said earlier.
All right. Now here is Boris Johnson B. Real or parody?
Looking at this speech that you've written, rather harsh, you know. I'm a bit of a sledgehammer. I'm not sure about starting attention. You, the underclass.
Yes, we should cut the niceties and get straight to sacrifice yourself for the good of the hive.
Ah, right. And by hive, you mean...
I mean future of the hive. I mean country.
Of course, that second one was spitting image. And it's pretty hard to tell Boris on the other one, except for the sidekick. And the first sidekick, he got all flustered because... Biden says, oh, and the president of South Africa. And he'd already induced the president of South Africa, so he starts... Blah, 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 blah. And the second one, his sidekick, is a parody of one of his aides there that they portray as an alien, talking about how we have to sacrifice everything to the good of the hive, which, quite frankly, is about where we are now with 2020. The hive. Oh, I mean the village. I mean the country. Yes, the hive. The hive mentality. And the human sacrifice involved, because that's what we're doing right now. Of course, they portray him as an alien. all these ideas are alien to us. Boris Johnson went on to say, we're going to be building back better together, building back greener, building back fair, building back more equal, in a more gender neutral, perhaps a more feminine way. Well, they could have a lot of fun with this. How is a gender neutral and in a more feminine way, how does that even equate? I mean, this guy is just a blithering idiot. But then again, there's Joe Biden there to make him look good. Biden gave Boris a $6,000 bike, and then complete with a blue helmet bearing the American and British flags. Was this a dig at his obesity? I don't know. Was it telling him, he's got an official Prime Minister bike? Will we be getting rid of the beast, you know, the big presidential limo, Air Force One, because we got to save the planet? No, they won't do that. You're not going to see Biden tooling around on a bicycle, right, with a phalanx of security on his side. But anyway, he gave the bike to Boris Johnson, and Johnson gave Biden a framed photo of Frederick Douglass that he printed from Wikipedia. So I don't know. It's a big contest between the two of them as to who is the bigger twit. And Boris Johnson is in a sausage war spat. As I reported in RT in the headlines, I said the summit descends into a simmering row over sausages. And so this is about taxes and duties and how they're going to do trade. And they're fighting over the sausage, which I think is a bit ironic because it was Otto Bismarck, the German premier, who said laws are like sausage. You don't want to see how they're made. And you don't want to see what's going on in the G7 either, but you should pay attention, as disgusting as it is. Biden is putting the U.S. taxes under global control, is a headline from WND, and that's exactly what is happening. It doesn't really matter what the rate is. You understand that when they get together and they set a global corporate minimum tax rate of 15%, and then they have another one that's 21%. That's the 21% is the global corporate minimum tax rate on American business. The administration is pushing for a global agreement amongst foreign countries to set a foreign minimum tax rate of 15%. But let me tell you, when they coordinate tax policy at the global level, and this is the first step to do that, it won't be long before they start imposing a global tax and use that then just to move that over to the global governance. And the global tax will come in the form of carbon taxes for this green agenda. All of this stuff is converging together. All of it. It very neatly dovetails together. That was always the plan. And when you look at this, of course, you see now all of the stories about these billionaires, richest people the world has ever seen, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and others who are paying zero taxes, right? How did that get leaked out from the IRS? Everybody say, who did that? That's a criminal offense, right? Are they looking to prosecute anybody? No, they wanted that stuff leaked out. They leaked it out on purpose. We all know they don't pay any taxes. We get it from their public reports for the most part. These guys that are so wealthy, we can see their corporations don't pay anything. And so now we see that they themselves don't pay anything. And that was a violation of law. Whoever did it ought to be going to jail. But I guarantee you they're not going to go to jail. They're not going to go to jail any more than they came after James Clapper for openly committing perjury about spying on the American people. They let the statute of limitations expire. Not a single Republican, let me repeat that, not a single Republican came after James Clapper, even though he was supposed to be clearly on the other side. He was part of this coup against President Trump. Not a single one came after him for perjury. And you're not going to see anybody prosecuted for this IRS leak of data. They did it conveniently at the same time they're talking about creating a global minimum tax rate for fairness. For fairness. This is the same thing they did when they imposed the income tax in the U.S. The income tax in the U.S. was not a wage tax. That didn't become a wage tax until World War II. And at that point, they said, well, we need to tax the working people's wages, but it'll be a very small amount, and it'll just be for the duration of the war. And then they just ignored that sunset clause and continued that. But when the income tax was initially put on, around 1913, when they created the Federal Reserve and income tax about the same time. When they created it, it was a very, very, very small tax on the 1% of the 1%. So you had to be extremely wealthy. Nobody, it was sold to everybody as, this is the way we come after Rockefeller and these other people. And so everybody, oh yeah, we don't, those people are just filthy rich. Let's put a tax on them. And it's a small tax, not a problem. Of course, they never paid the tax. They really didn't pay the tax. So it's always based on envy. And that's what they're doing right now. But what is really being established here is a global tax regime. This is the very beginning of a global tax regime. And, of course, everything else that they're doing is tied to the so-called climate crisis. A good example of this is an article you'll find on Zero Hedge from National Post about Mark Carney. Mark Carney, one of the elite. It's surprising me that you don't hear more information about him. He's been both head of the Bank of Canada and the Bank of England. Isn't that interesting that he could do both of those countries? But yeah, he is the one of the central bankers' central bankers. And he is thoroughly Marxist, as this article from National Post points out. What Carney ultimately wants is a technocratic dictatorship justified by climate alarmism. And that has always been the plan. That was the plan with Agenda 21, with the UN 2030 agenda, with Great Reset, all of these. And that's exactly what they imposed with the lockdown last year, a technocratic dictatorship. And now they're going back to the original justification to lock in the lockdown. According to him, he says Western society is morally rotten. It's been corrupted by capitalism. Wait a minute, how can this be? You mean a central banker who doesn't like capitalism? Why, that's as crazy as Rex Tillerson hating the oil industry when he's executive of Exxon. I had a lot of people saying that at the very beginning of the Trump administration when there was he was filling in his cabinet for the first time. And he picked Rex Tillerson. I said, first of all, this guy is going to do everything he can to destroy our life with climate alarmism. People said that you're not, you don't even know what you're talking about. He's a oil executive from Exxon. Don't you even know who this guy is? And I said, don't you understand the people who are pushing this really the hardest are the oil companies, because they've already bought into the new technologies that are going to replace this, and that's how they make their money. They can get on the ground floor, just like Bill Gates is getting in on the ground floor of the synthetic meat stuff and then pushing the government to ban his competitors and perhaps reward him for what he's doing, but make sure that he gets in at the very beginning on this and then rides it up. And that's what the oil companies have done. They'll still produce a little bit of oil for plastics and other things like that, but they will be to the oil industry what De Beers is to the diamond industry. They'll have a monopoly on it, and they'll make obscene profits doing less work. That's the whole point. And so you saw Rex Tillerson pushing very hard to stay into the Paris Climate Accord, along with Ivanka and Jared. And eventually they got out, but they really didn't get out. You see, the Paris Climate Accord and all of the smoke and mirrors done by the Republican Party and by Trump was just that. It was smoke and mirrors. The self-ratification of that treaty, as Obama and John Kerry point out, was railed about by conservative media. What they didn't tell you was that the Republican Senate and Mitch McConnell specifically could have called for an up or down vote on that, and they had the votes to shut that down. Mitch McConnell did not call for a vote on that because he didn't want it shut down. He could have at any time, including any time prior to January the 20th this last year, whenever it is that the Senate comes in. I guess they come in at the same time as the president. But even between election and the new Democrat Congress, you could still have had Mitch McConnell shut this thing down with a vote once and for all. President Trump, on the other hand, said, well, we're not going to do that. And then he had a lot of people who were lobbying him saying, well, you've got to actually do an executive order saying that we're not going to do this, that this is not the law of the land, or some legal procedure like that. And Trump finally agreed to do that, but then he said, well, I'll do that the day after the election. He did it the day after the election, and since it was just an executive order, it didn't have any more effect, really, than Obama's executive order. And as soon as Biden got in, he reversed what Trump had done. It could have been stopped by Mitch McConnell and the Republicans, but they didn't want to stop it. So the climate emergency, it threatens life on Earth, and it requires rigid controls on personal freedom, on the economy, on industry, and on corporate funding, because they don't like capitalism, these bankers. And again, how can that be? That's as people look at this and say, yeah, the bankers, they're all about capitalism, right? No. If you go back and you look at the Lenin's revolution, he was in exile in Switzerland, and you had a German banker who gave him $10 million in gold, put it on a train. They sealed up the train, sent it straight from Switzerland into Russia, and that's how they financed the Russian Revolution. So you have Carney, who's been front and center in promotion of a political agenda known as the Great Reset or the Green New Deal or Building Back Better or the UN 2030 agenda for sustainability. It's got so many different aspects, smart cities, all of that. Oh, it's a very broad plan. Except all of these different names, they all have the same features. They're different in terms of the names that they give them and the organizations that they come from, but they're all on the same page, and they all have the year 2030 as completion date. The article on Zero Hedge, and again, this is coming from National Post, said, Carney draws inspiration from, among others, Marx, Engels, Lenin. The agenda he promotes differs from Marxism in two key respects. And I think this is kind of interesting. He says, first of all, the private sector is not to be expropriated, but to be made a partner in reshaping the economy. This is something that we've seen in China. This is why I say, you know, China, they have not confiscated the property. And again, this is the difference between Stalin and Hitler. Hitler mocked Stalin. He said he just took over all these corporations and industry. He doesn't know how to run anything. I'm going to leave these people who know how to run things in power. I'll control them. I'll tell them what to do. And that has historically been the difference between economic fascism, what Hitler did, saying I'm going to leave them in power, but they're going to work for me. I'm going to tell them what to do. And then at the very last stage, I'll slit their throats and take over everything, right? And the difference between economically between fascism like that and communism was the communists took it over, said, well, we can run everything. But what is happening now in China is that they don't take the companies away. They just take a partnership in it. So you have to have every company there has to have Chinese partners, whether it's a Chinese company or Chinese government partners, whether it's a domestic company or a foreign investment. You have to have partners there. That's the model. Secondly, they're not even promising to make life better. Isn't that the most interesting thing? Think about that. These people are talking to us about austerity, hardship, sacrifice, about everything. It used to be they would lie to people and say, we're going to make your life better. Now they're telling you, we're going to make things hell for you. And you're going to have to do this anyway, because otherwise you're going to die. It's just that. They don't even try to give you any hope. It's just a hopeless scenario. Carney's agenda is promoted by the UN, of course. It was planned by the UN, frankly. Should change that word in his article here. He said, listen to the sense of himself, his pride, his arrogance. And this is a good thing, quite frankly. I'm glad to see somebody this proud. Why? Because God loves to humble people who are proud like this. These people are raging, not just against you and I, they're raging against God. This hubris that they have, this pride that they have, oh, they're ready for a fall. Listen to this. When I worked at the Bank of England, he says, I would remind myself every morning of Marcus Aurelius's phrase, arise to do the work of humankind. Was that what the Roman Empire was about? Was that what this new empire coming out of Davos and the UN is about? No, it's not. Yeah, I'm doing the work of humankind. One is reminded of the French aristocrat who ordered his valet to wake him up with similar words. Remember, monsieur, that you have great things to do. The commentator says, that is not the only thing that Carney has in common with this aristocrat, San Simon, who believed that society should be ruled by savants, such as himself. An alliance of engineers and other technocratic intellectuals, along with bankers. Carney is very much a banker technocrat. But not merely at ease, gliding along the corridors of global bureaucratic power, but also expert at framing arguments that support an ever-expanding role for his class. People in general, and markets in particular, are not wise, he says. They're not moral, and they don't see as far as Mark Carney does. He sums up this failing in the tragedy of the horizon, a phrase that he concocted for a speech ahead of the 2015 Paris Climate Conference. The tragedy of the horizon. In other words, you don't have the vision thing, as George H.W. Bush pointed out. You know, that vision thing. You don't have it. You ordinary people, you don't know what's good for you. We've seen Vladimir Posner, the old Soviet propagandist, and these other people, these globalist confabs saying, yeah, we have to censor media because these people just can't be confused with competing facts. We just have to give them a single narrative. They just can't make up their mind. And that's what he's saying. Markets in general, people in general, are not wise, they're not moral, and they don't see as far as these people do, which is the antithesis of everything our society has been built upon. We understand, going back to the essay, for example, of Leonard Reed, I, Pencil, talks about how you don't have anybody like Mark Carney who developed a pencil. You don't have any central planning of that. There's no single person who really manufactures a pencil because, even though you have some people who do the final assembly, he talks about all the different places where you've got to get the materials to make the rubber, to make the brass, to make the wood, to make the graphite. Who knows how to do all this stuff? How do they get these ratios together? And I said a year ago, as this lockdown began by President Trump, I said, this is the greatest folly I have ever seen in my life. This is why we're having shortages of food, shortages of toilet paper, why the farmers are destroying food on the farms, why you can't get anything on the shelves. It's because they've decided that they know how to distribute the goods better than anybody else. And they can decide who is essential and who is non-essential, which ones need to be shut down. That kind of arrogance is fatal to a society. We're all going to pay the price for this kind of arrogance. It won't just be them. We will pay the price as well. And we're paying the price now. We're paying the price in gold, rather not in gold, but inflation. I'm going to be talking about gold, inflation, and crypto coming up. Also, I want to talk about what is happening at the Southern Baptist Convention. It's an important story for everybody in terms of whether you're Southern Baptist or not. Doesn't really matter. I think it has lessons for everybody about the state of our institutions and the state of our society, as well as the fact that this is a spiritual war. But we'll talk about that coming up as well. Of course, information on the vaccines and on the lockdowns. But before we leave, G7, they have a very, very ambitious infrastructure plan. As a matter of fact, since we have the world's paper currency, we print all the monopoly money. And so Biden is jumping in there. Yeah, we're going to do a $40 trillion infrastructure plan here, right? Oh, that won't be destructive of the dollar. That won't be inflationary, will it? No, not at all. No problem. Because we now have modern monetary theory, MMT, which I call the magic money tree. Yeah, a $40 trillion Build Back Better infrastructure plan for the world. For the world. Being put out there by Joe Biden. They are going to bankrupt us. They're going to put us into debt slavery. That is the whole point of all of this. Taking a look before we go to the break, we'll do a break at the top of the hour. The transitory scam. 10 companies warn about passing along rising costs to consumers. Yeah, hyperinflation is right at the cusp right now. Here's an example. Let me just run down these different companies. Campbell Soup, on their conference call to investors third quarter, the word inflation was mentioned 35 times by executives and analysts. Campbell said it'll be raising food prices this summer to offset the rising costs. Smuckers, 10 times they talked about inflation during their investor call. They said broad-based inflation because of many commodities, packaging materials, and transportation channels. Stanley and Black & Decker, they've merged together. Commodity inflation update, they said the steel, resin, base metals, electrical components, and batteries have pushed incremental inflation costs up for 2021 by $160 million versus what they had expected in January. So in 6 months, they said inflation has kicked up. It's going to add $160 million more to our costs. And they basically listed everything. Steel, resin, base metals, batteries, electrical components, everything that goes into their products is going up. Whirlpool. So the company is seeing price increases and would pass the costs on to customers. We took price increases in every region of the world that range from 5 to 12%. And this is huge. Like I said, we're on the cusp of hyperinflation. These are driven by commodity cost increases. Kimberly-Clark said things like toilet paper and Huggies diapers. Oh, there you go. They're going to have mid to high single-digit inflation. Sharp rises in input costs, they said, are driving this. Honeywell, inflation is taking hold, they said the CEO. He said, there's no doubt about it. We knew it. We see it. They said they will be quickly taking action on pricing to stay ahead of the problem. Clorox, significant resin price inflation. Procter & Gamble, this is one of the bigger increases in commodity costs that we've seen over the period of time that I've been involved with this, and that's a very long period of time, said the COO. Coca-Cola, well, here's at least one product we don't need. Coca-Cola's CEO said the company will be increasing prices to offset rising costs. And finally, Reynolds said that they will be doing a three-step price increase that is already underway for its most popular products last month. And, of course, the Federal Reserve says, no, this is all according to plan. It's just transitory. It's just temporary. Nothing to worry about. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Well, when we look at inflation, here's some other benchmarks about what is going on overall. When you look at the numbers, so across the spectrum of goods, we had a 5% rise from last year. Economists surveyed by Dow Jones had been expecting a gain of 4.7%. The reading represented the biggest consumer price index gain since the 5.3% increase in August of 2008. What was that the beginning of? That was the beginning of the financial crisis that sent the U.S. spiraling into the worst recession since the Great Depression. So it's going up the fastest pace in 13 years, fastest we have seen since the Great Recession. This is a story from Michael Snyder, Economic Collapse blog. He said, according to one deli owner, the true rate of inflation for meat prices is probably closer to 20 or 30%. CBS says they talked to a deli owner and meat wholesaler, Jeff Cohen. He said, they say on the national news that it's 10%, but that's not true. It's probably closer to 20 to 30%. This is a guy who's actually buying it. And, of course, why is the news saying that? Well, because they're being fed figures by the government agencies that track things like unemployment and inflation, and we know how they have rigged those figures. That's why I said, you know, you're going to believe these CDC figures. There's not a single statistic that comes out of the federal government that isn't loaded with an agenda that skews the numbers. And that's true whether they're talking about COVID cases, whether they're talking about inflation, unemployment, climate change, any of this stuff. All of it is rigged as propaganda. CBS News interviewed one shopper in Maryland. She said she's now spending about twice as much on groceries as she did before. She said she typically spent about $75 a week on groceries, but now her bill is averaging up to $150 or more. And then Michael Snyder says, then there's cereal maker General Mills, who includes arcane phrases like strategic revenue management or holistic margin management. And just in case that wasn't good enough to conceal what is really happening here, they then reduced those phrases to acronyms. So they don't talk about strategic revenue management. They talk about SRM and HMM. What are they talking about? It's just inflation. That's how far they'll go to keep you from looking at inflation. Real issue here, and, you know, we've had for the longest time. First, we began with end the Fed, and, you know, make no mistake about it, the things that are driving this are the massive amounts of money that began with President Trump, the first one of those bills, $3.7 trillion, nearly $4 trillion in one of these pandemic stimulus bills. And that was just one of them. He added a little over $6 trillion last year. Biden is trying to accelerate that even more so. And it's the Federal Reserve who is pushing that as well. As a matter of fact, the Federal Reserve began pumping this all up into a gigantic bubble. And I talked about that with Gerald Celente many, many times. And we revisited it again a little bit on Friday. How in the fall of 2019, before any of this pandemic stuff happened, they were dumping money into what they called the repo market. I'd never even heard of that before. But they were dumping trillions of dollars into the repo market, and they have been just pumping money everywhere. And so for the longest time, you had Ron Paul and others say, we need to end the Fed. Then they got a little bit smarter about it, and they said, we need to audit the Fed. Audit the Fed. You need to get people to understand what really is going on with the Federal Reserve, the corruption, the criminality, and the lack of transparency. So you need to have an audit of the Fed. And now you've got Representative Alex Mooney, Republican of West Virginia, who has sponsored the Gold Reserve Transparency Act of 2021. H.R. 3526, if you want to write some letters and put some pressure on congressmen in case they'll listen to you. You don't need to make a persuasive argument to them. Just tell them you support H.R. 3526. If they get a lot of calls on that, they say, what is this? Well, okay, well, I guess I can sign on to that. That's the way some of them might work. Anyway, it would require the first true audit of America's gold. So we're going to go from end the Fed to audit the Fed, and let's make it a little bit narrower. Let's just go to audit the gold. Who has the gold? Who has title to the gold? Is it there? Is it in Fort Knox? Where is it? Who owns it? Have you mortgaged it to the hilt? Have you transferred it to other countries? We'd like to know. Are we allowed to know? He wrote to Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen this week, requesting detailed information about the U.S. gold holdings delegated to the Federal Reserve and to the IMF. And he posed some additional questions. According to testimony in 2011, he said, about 5% of the U.S. gold holdings were stored at the time the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, stated the gold is not considered to be audited and that there is no assaying or inventorying of that gold that has occurred since at least 1986. Wow. So you mean for 35 years they've not audited this stuff? You know, we had a lot of interesting things that happened in 1986. That was when Reagan allowed Fauci to give legal immunity to the pharmaceutical companies for any damage that they do to children with their vaccines. And that was the point at which we decided we weren't going to pay attention to what the Federal Reserve did with the gold. They had immunity to do whatever they wanted to with the gold. Second question, for what purpose is the U.S. gold bullion stored by the Federal Reserve? Good question. That opens things up quite a bit. Number three, according to testimony by Mr. Engel, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York holds gold for other nations as well. So is the U.S.-owned gold stored at the Federal Reserve held in a physically segregated manner from the holdings of other nations? In other words, if you were to go in there and you open it up and you see the gold sitting there, is that our gold? Is that somebody else's gold? During a 2011 hearing, one of the representatives referred to a report that 261 million ounces in U.S.-owned gold is part of the IMF reserves. So his question to Janet Yellen, congressman from West Virginia, Alex Mooney, said, at present, how many ounces are owned by the IMF or are pledged to the IMF? Number five, how much U.S.-owned gold is in the possession of or used by the Exchange Stabilization Fund as part of its activities? Number six, please provide details as to what U.S.-owned gold is currently pledged, swapped, leased, or otherwise encumbered, and for what purposes? Finally, they say, there is evidence, says Zero Hedge, that the U.S. Treasury may have sold, swapped, leased, or otherwise placed encumbrances upon some of America's gold over time. Now, that's an understatement, if ever there was one. But the federal government officials have strongly resisted any disclosure of this. Everything is hidden from us, isn't it? That was one of the key issues of the founders of this country, Thomas Jefferson and others. If you hide, if the government is allowed to hide what it is doing from the people, then they can. Our liberties are not safe. The structure of the government is corrupted. Everything about that. And this is just yet one more example of that. To address these concerns, H.R. 3526 requires a full accounting of any and all sales, purchases, disbursements, or receipts, a full accounting of any and all encumbrances. That's right. And I just want to say thank you to Tony Arterburn, who has done guest hosting for me, been a guest many times. He sent this. Very nice. It's a 10 ounces of fine silver. Thank you, by the way, if you're looking for a place to buy gold or silver, wisewolf.gold is his business. And he is a like-minded individual, a vet. And he is, I'll say a veteran because I don't want to say vet anymore. I keep thinking about my dog. No, he's a veteran, military veteran. He and his wife. And they've been protesting this lockdown from the very beginning. And a great place, a good person to support instead of doing business with bankers. What the next gold confiscation will look like? Is there going to be gold confiscation? On April the 5th, 1933, FDR issued an executive order making it illegal for U.S. citizens to own gold, even though it's in the Constitution. How about that? The decree forced Americans to sell their gold at an artificially low official price. If they refused, the government could hit them with stiff penalties, a $10,000 fine. Think about this, $10,000 in 1933? As they point out, that would be $205,000 today and or up to 10 years in prison. So you're going to sell your gold at a low price or you're going to get a $200,000 fine and 10 years in prison. So they're basically just stealing gold from people. That was FDR. Now, you know, FDR campaigned on getting rid of alcohol prohibition. The one thing I'll say about alcohol prohibition, as even though it was just as counterproductive as our drug war prohibition has been, at least they had the respect for the Constitution. When FDR prohibited gold, he didn't even bother with anything in the Constitution. And that's really where we started leaving the Constitution behind with all the different his New Deal. And that's what these Democrats want to do. They don't care what the Constitution says. So we could wind up with a gold New Deal where they do the type of thing that FDR did. Now, this is an article written from internationalman.com on Zero Hedge. And they point out, they said, well, we don't think that'll happen exactly that way again. They'll find a different way to confiscate gold, but it won't be just an outright order for a couple of reasons. So today, only a tiny fraction of the U.S. population owns gold. He says most Americans have probably never seen a gold coin, but that wasn't the case in 1933 when the U.S. was still on a variation of the gold standard, and that's why the government probably won't repeat the 1933 theft. It's simply not worth the effort. So if they want to confiscate wealth, they're going to go for the easy way. They're going to continue to debase the currency, and that's what the Federal Reserve is doing right now. That's part of the Great Reset, to destroy your wealth by destroying the currency. To destroy your wealth by having the CDC come in and say, well, we're not going to allow any evictions. We're going to continue to allow the bills to pile up on these private landlords until we say, now you can evict people, now you can do foreclosures, and then the banks will take everything because these individuals will not be able to pay off this balloon debt that in many cases has ballooned to tens of thousands of dollars for people who are just middle class or even below middle class, that have taken out mortgages to try to build wealth with rental property. But he goes on to say, but that doesn't mean that gold owners are in the clear. He says, I think government will try a new scam. They'll try to tax the windfall profits on gold. This would make it much easier for the government to accomplish something similar to the 1933 heist. Because, you know, what is a windfall profit? It's whatever the government says is too much of a profit. It's just arbitrary. It sounds really evil, doesn't it? I think somebody ought to do something about the windfall profits that the windmill industry has made. That kind of scam, that kind of corruption, kind of backroom dealing. But he says, if the price of gold explodes, I wouldn't be surprised if Congress passed a Fair Share Gold Windfall Profit Tax Act, levying 80% or 90% or more on gold profits. He says the solution, and this is just down here as investment advice from this particular guy, not from me, I'm just telling you what he has to say. This is coming from International Man. He says, think about putting your gold stocks in some kind of an IRA, because they're pretty reluctant to come after people's retirement. It makes them look bad. As a matter of fact, if somebody puts something in a retirement fund, you can't touch it even if they declare bankruptcy. So they kind of protect those retirement funds. So that might be one way to do it. I think another thing that he doesn't mention in this article is the fact that we've seen a lot of different states now start to classify gold as more of a currency rather than an investment, so that there isn't a transfer tax when you put it out there. So if you had a situation like this, if the government decided, the federal government decided that they were going to put on a tax, a transfer tax or a wealth tax on this, you could still have the states could push back against that transfer tax. Let's take a quick look at Bitcoin. As Mark Jeftovic points out again on Zero Hedge, Bitcoin is de-dollarization and Ethereum is de-financialization. Now, what does he mean by this? It's kind of interesting, his perspective. And again, make up your own mind. He says, as we see El Salvador becoming the first country to make Bitcoin legal tender, he says, in my mind, this has not only started the starting gun on de-dollarization in earnest, but it goes even beyond that. And he sees Bitcoin as something you would hold if you're bearish on the economy, and Ethereum as something that you would hold if you're bullish on the economy, in the same way that people would do stocks and bonds, right? And so he says he thinks that a lot of the money that is flowing into these cryptocurrencies is not necessarily coming from gold. Some people have positioned it that way. You see Max Kaiser, Peter Schiff constantly attacking each other, gold versus Bitcoin. And he says, and it's not really that so much as it is people who are concerned about the stock market, but especially about the bond market. He says, I think this is his opinion, that Bitcoin's inflow will come largely from the more than 10 times larger bond market and not gold. So instead of the $10 trillion that's there with gold that could go into the Bitcoin market, he said there's $120 trillion, of which $20 trillion of it has already yielding negative returns. Think about that. The people who have put money in some of these bonds, out of $120 trillion, $20 trillion of it is getting negative interest rates. So why wouldn't these people put it in something like Ethereum? And then if, into Bitcoin. He says he thinks that that is how this might break down. He says, well, I didn't realize until the bankless panel this week about the current state of definancialization is that there's another $100 trillion plus market, and it's going to be sending its value in a parallel mother of all wealth transfers. And that wealth transfer is the flight of assets from the traditional banking system into Ethereum and into the DeFi market. And he defines that as, he said, that is definancializing all assets. He says, when financialization is the widespread hollowing out of all value and turning it into multiple layers of rehypothecated debt, and that's what they've been doing. They've been financializing. First we saw with the real estate bubble, these other things. Now he's saying that to move away from that, the reaction to that, they call that definancializing assets or DeFi. He said DeFi is where money gets intelligence and value can compound, where tokenized assets can increase their purchasing power over time, where savers can be rewarded instead of being penalized with negative interest rates. It's where capital formation is possible. So I just throw that out there because I think that is interesting. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to take a look at America Held Hostage, some vaccine updates, a couple of your letters, and take a quick look at what is happening with one of the larger Christian denominations that has been very conservative but is in a fight for its life right now with the Marxist barbarians inside the gate with critical race theory and intersectionality. See, the problem is if you don't understand what the threat is, these people can get inside, and that's what happened at the Southern Baptist Conference. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
All right, and a follow-up to a story that we had last week about the Alzheimer's drug. If you remember that, it was a great story illustrating the lack of credibility, the corruption, how these regulatory agencies have become the servants of the industries that they're supposed to monitor. You had a scientific advisory committee of 11 people take a look at the efficacy of an Alzheimer's drug. 10 of them said no. One of them abstained. And it was the first time, as many people who have been on these panels pointed out, the first time they had ever seen no one on the scientific advisory board vote in favor of a drug and still have the FDA approve it. Subsequent to that, you then had, over a period of several days, you first had one, then two, then three people resigned from those scientific advisory committees in protest. But here's the follow-up that came out over the weekend. The Atlantic says that this drug could break American health care. Earlier this week, the FDA overruled, to much criticism, its own scientific advisory committee and approved the Alzheimer's treatment Aduhelm. they make these names. That just cracks me up, these drug companies' names. The only thing funny about this is their names. The agency made this decision despite thin evidence of the drug's clinical efficacy, despite its serious side effects, including brain swelling and bleeding. As a result, a more serious risk now exists that millions of people will be prescribed a drug that does more harm than good. Where have we seen this before? With Trump's Operation Warp Speed? Yes, exactly. These people are bought and sold from the Oval Office to wherever it is these bureaucrats reside in Washington, D.C. But the drug will average $56,000 per year per patient. That explains it all, doesn't it? You see, they don't care. They don't care about the safety, just like they don't care about the vaccines, right? They are making tens of billions of dollars, each of these companies, making obscene profits. And they don't care about how safe or effective these vaccines are, just like they don't care about this Alzheimer's drug that's going to do more harm than good, just like their vaccines. And it doesn't matter how many scientists point this out. They're going to go ahead with this because this is nothing other than corporate corrupt fascism. The same thing we see talking about the model that is coming out of China, the model that is going to be part of the Marxist takeover with this G7 thing. It's all the Chinese communist model. They use Marxist tactics and intimidation to reset society, but then they also partner with these people. And you know that these people like Fauci and the rest of them are getting kickbacks just like President Xi. Absolutely, no question about it. You look at what he did with Remdesivir, for Gilead, these other companies, his partnership with Moncef Slaoui, Moderna, and these other vaccines. And so they point out this drug that has absolutely no value and is very dangerous is so incredibly expensive that with the rise in age of our demographics and the subsequent increase in Alzheimer's, that this could bankrupt our healthcare system. Well, why not? Because the vaccine and the mania to lock us down is bankrupting our country as well, isn't it? Operation Warp Speed, the lockdowns, the stimulus, all of this stuff is designed to do a complete leveling of our system. And this is just one more example of the rampant corruption in Washington from an agency, the FDA, the CDC, all these agencies that should not even exist. They have no constitutional authority. They cannot be justified. Cannot be justified. You can't justify the war on drugs by saying it's part of the Supremacy Clause or the Commerce Clause. Or that. All of that was there when they created a separate constitutional amendment to prohibit alcohol. It is a legal prevarication. It is an obvious lie. Nobody ever believed that. This is something that's being sold to you by the most dishonest politicians and judges. We've had a shocking jump in vaccine deaths reported this week. The number now stands at 5,997. Just in the first 3 months, the VAERS website recorded over 1,750 deaths due to vaccines, and now that number is just under 6,000. Just under 6,000. I want you to listen to the way that ABC reports when we're talking about deaths and other adverse effects. And we're just talking about the deaths here. There's tens of thousands of adverse effects. Many of these will be lifelong. Many of these adverse effects, when they start talking about teenagers with the heart issues, do they know that this isn't going to affect them for the rest of their life? I mean, one of the reasons that they put out some of these childhood vaccines is to protect kids from diseases, childhood diseases that would affect their heart. You don't think that this is going to have a long-term effect on their heart, on many other organs accumulating in the ovaries and other things, as we talked about, the spike protein. Again, last week, 2 weeks ago, when did that come out? We had the German researcher talking about the spike protein. We also had a Pfizer paper that was leaked through Japan, as well as Biddle, a Canadian virologist who exposed this. They all said, yeah, it's the spike that we're injecting people with that your body is creating. That's the thing that's doing all the damage. And not only that, but it is freely moving throughout the blood system. It is accumulating in organs. It is passing through the blood-brain barrier, all these different things. But let's take a look at how ABC News spins it, and they'll take a quick look at NBC. First, ABC. Listen to the different contradictions. Real quickly, in about 40 seconds, he goes through six radically contradictory statements.
Link between vaccines and heart inflammation in younger Americans. So far, more than 200 cases, but that's out of millions of vaccinations of young people. Tonight, the symptoms to look for. Meantime, the push to vaccinate young people continues. This evening, Moderna now applying for emergency use authorization to vaccinate 12 to 17-year-olds. And the numbers tonight, 172 million Americans with at least one dose. That's about 61% of everyone 12 years and older in this country. And tonight here, we continue to report on concerns that huge batches of the vaccine are set to expire and could go unused. But tonight, word from the FDA, they're extending the shelf life of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine by 6 weeks. Here's Marcus Moore.
So let's just break this down. First of all, he talks about, well, there's a potential link to heart disease for teenagers who have, he didn't say this, but who have zero risk from the virus, according to the CDC's own numbers. So a potential risk to the heart of these teenagers, but that's just out of millions of people. But then we're going to tell you what to be careful about, right? It's the same thing we saw coming out of the health experts, because these people are their mouthpieces, saying, well, we don't think there's any link. It's just a coincidence that these teenagers are suddenly coming down with heart issues. But here's what you should be careful about, right? So at the same time they tell you there's nothing to worry about, here's what you need to look out for. Here's what you need to be worried about. The next thing he says is Moderna wants to have an emergency use authorization for its drug, because right now it's, I guess, just Pfizer, for the 12-year-olds to 17-year-olds. And, of course, they're pushing this out to toddlers already in their experiments. Then he brags about how we've got now 172 million people that have had at least one jab, 62%. But people are getting so hesitant that they got batches of vaccines that are about to expire. But that's not a problem, because now the FDA has just arbitrarily said, well, we'll extend the life of that. No problem. We'll just give you more time. Here's how NBC reports it for teens.
Texas at Houston Methodist. Doubts over all the vaccines have led to legal action.
You're willing to lose your job over this?
Yes.
Tell me why.
Because I am not going to take that vaccine.
Jennifer Bridges, one of 117 hospital workers, now part of a mass action lawsuit suing Houston Methodist for its policy requiring all staff to be vaccinated or terminated. The hospital thanking the more than 24,000 other employees who followed policy.
What the mandate has allowed us to do is go that last mile and get everybody vaccinated so we have every layer of protection for our patients that we possibly can.
Absolutely despicable. And I punched up the wrong video. I've got another one about the teens. But let's talk about the lawsuit, because as they filed this lawsuit, the thing that really surprised me was how rapidly they took this to court. They didn't waste any time. I think they filed it on Thursday, maybe officially on Friday. There was talk, I think, on Thursday. I think they filed it on Friday. They got a decision from the judge immediately on Saturday. Why? Because they've got to shut down this rebellion from medical professionals, doctors and nurses, who said, we're not going to be part of your experiment here. You haven't tested this. So cue the federal judge who threw out the lawsuit. It was 117 employees at the Houston Hospital System, Houston Methodist Hospital. The U.S. District Judge Lynn Hughes ruled Saturday, comes in on Saturday and does it immediately, says the argument the vaccines are, quote, experimental and dangerous, unquote, is false. It's false? You've had more people, more deaths reported in 5 months than now I think it is up to 30 years. I had that number here, but I don't see it now. So when you look at this, this is equivalent. It was 21, 22 years, a couple of weeks ago when it was around 4,000. So you've got a couple of decades, between 20 and 30 years, equivalent of the number of deaths. As a matter of fact, Travis, pull up the chart on this article from Gateway Pundit, shocking jump in vaccine deaths reported this week. And just look at how it goes straight up. This is the number of deaths reported by the VAERS system going back to 1990. And it's basically a flat line. And then it just goes straight up as soon as we hit these COVID vaccines. There it is right there. Zoom in on that. Look at that chart there. Nothing to see there, nothing to be worried about, right? So go ahead and take your vaccine because your employer says so. And there's nothing dangerous about that, right? We know that it's experimental. That is not even an issue. This judge just flat out lies to people. It's been given emergency use authorization. It is experimental. It has not been authorized yet. So the judge said of the chief plaintiff, said Bridges, that's the chief plaintiff's name, can freely choose to accept or to refuse a COVID-19 vaccine. However, if she refuses, she'll simply need to work somewhere else. I think we need to get this judge to work somewhere else because the judge has refused to abide by the law. That's a key refusal, don't you think? Don't you think it's more important that somebody refuses to abide by the law if they're a judge or a politician than if we refuse to have a medical procedure that is experimental, forced upon us by our employers? Because that has been the plan from the very beginning. I pointed that out last year. Back in March, then again in the summer, then again in the fall. Finally, you had some of the alternative media pick it up. The New England Journal of Medicine said, we don't want to have this done by a law. We don't want to do this by law because that'll invite a due process challenge. No, we want this to be pushed through by the corporations. This has always been the plan. And what this judge, Judge Hughes, said was despicable, sounded exactly like Biden. Well, you got a choice, right? You got a choice. You can either get vaccinated, said Biden, or you can wear a mask until you do. This judge says, well, you can either have a job and get vaccinated or have no job. There you go. She said, every employment includes limits on the worker's behavior in exchange for remuneration. That's just part of the bargain. Well, part of the bargain that we had when we created government, judge, was that you protect our individual liberties, and that means you protect them also from corporations that would remove our free speech, that would remove our human dignity and liberty, that would force upon us experimental treatments as a condition of employment. That is wrong. The government gets involved all the time in disputes between employees and employers, and they should be a referee. They get involved about the safety. Of course, they claimed it was about the safety, but now even OSHA says, well, we don't care. You know, we used to have limits on how long you could wear a mask, but we just removed all that. We waived all that. We don't care about that at all. When you go back and you look at the report from, I'll play the one now from NBC, this is what they said about the teens taking the vaccine.
Room to the courtroom this morning, new fronts in the fight against COVID-19. The CDC finding 16 to 24-year-olds who received the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine have experienced higher than normal cases of myocarditis and inflammation of the heart muscle. Myocarditis symptoms can include fever and fatigue, shortness of breath, and chest pain. The CDC said the higher rate of cases occurred especially among young men following their second dose of an mRNA vaccine, but notes the reports are rare given the number of vaccine doses administered.
Okay, so they're rare. Let's just do a thought experiment here. We've had the Boeing 737 MAX, a new design from Boeing. You're familiar with that, a couple of years ago. We had two crashes that were 5 months apart. How many people died? 346. Now, would they say about that? And of course, they didn't. Boeing does not have legal immunity from creating defective products like the big pharmaceutical companies do, thanks to Fauci and Reagan. They don't have legal immunity for that. But would the government say about the two Boeing crashes, 5 months apart, 346 people dead? Would they say, millions of people are flying on planes every day, and you're worried about 300 people dying? Come on. Look at the risk. It's totally safe. Don't worry about the Boeing 737 MAX. Where they say, just look at Boeing's safety record. They got a great safety record. They would say, so what? More people died in 5 months on a Boeing 737 MAX than in 30 years of the Boeing 737-300? Because that's where we are now with the vaccines, right? I mean, just compare it. You know, two Boeing planes. One of them has a pretty good safety record. The other one has two crashes in 5 months. What do? They shut down the one that had two crashes in 5 months. They didn't say, well, you know, they've made other products and they didn't have a problem with that. So, hey, let's just ignore it. Who cares that it accumulated more deaths more rapidly than any other airplane design since 1966? We don't care about that either. Because that's what the VAERS data shows about all of these Operation Warp Speed vaccines. They've accrued deaths more rapidly than any other vaccine ever. The crashes, they would say, it's just coincidence. It's probably pilot error. Don't blame the airplane design. Yeah, sure, they skipped the flight testing, but we need to get this thing out fast. Or would they say, and this is, okay, all right, we've had a couple of crashes with Boeing 737 MAX, but we can't shut this thing down. I mean, look, it's, you know, millions of people are flying on planes all the time, and these two planes have gone down. So let's have a $1 million drawing for a lifetime of free flights, as long as you take them on a Boeing 737 MAX. How about that? That sound good to you? And free donuts, free peanuts on the flight. Would that be what they do? Because that's what they're doing everywhere now, right? You got Gavin Newsom announcing a Taco Bell giveaway to vaccinated Californians. Isn't it funny how it's always the junk food that's going to kill you anyway? The stuff that is adding comorbidities. Hey, I've got some more comorbidities for you. We can always blame it on the Krispy Kreme and the Taco Bell garbage. And it's not the vaccine. It was that stuff that killed you. Or would they say, if you criticize Boeing, you're going to be kicked off of social media because any news about a 737 MAX crash is fake news, and it's coming from those anti-Boeing crowd, those people who don't like airplanes, right? Just think about that. And we're talking about something that is now, that was over 5 months, 346 people dead. Now over 5 months, we've got over 6,000 people, just under 6,000, 5,997 dead. 20 times the number of people that died, but we're not going to even slow down. We're going to accelerate. As a matter of fact, if we got some of these vaccines that are going to expire, we'll just extend the expiration date. No problem. No problem. Tony Blair is even saying unvaccinated Brits should remain under lockdown restrictions. This is a guy who pushed the UK into a war in Iraq based on lies about weapons of mass destruction, based on lies that were obtained by torture that was covered up by Gina Haspel that Trump put in charge of the CIA. Yeah, see, torture, besides being unethical and illegal, also is not pragmatic. It gets you lied into wars like this. So now he's going to go to war with the unvaxxed people. He said government should, quote, look again at distinguishing between those people who are vaccinated and those who aren't, because it really makes no sense to treat the two groups as if they're the same. If someone simply chooses not to get vaccinated, I mean, frankly, that's their choice, and you're not discriminating against them. They've chosen not to do it, so they've chosen to remain slaves the rest of their life. They've chosen to wear a mask the rest of their lives for a virus that we can't see as a pandemic anywhere. He says, it's going to be a new world altogether, he said. The sooner we grasp that and start to put in place the decisions needed for a deeper impact over the coming years, the better. And I say that's exactly true. We need to understand that it is a new world. And when you start to understand that, you start to realize, I had a video on Friday, and it was advice for people whose employers are trying to coerce them into a vaccine. And so I had a lot of comments on that particular video. And this one of the individuals said, sure, David, just quit your job and things will just, quote, work out. It's not that easy when you have bills, responsibilities, mortgages, years invested in a job. Please don't start sounding like life is just a utopian paradise. It's a dangerous time to leave your source of income. I didn't even have to respond to this individual. The other people watched it, understood. One person said, I'm sure many men said the same thing during the Nazi era. Another one said, man up and protect yourself and your family. Do you really think that you will have all those possessions and all those creature comforts in the upcoming future with the kind of tyrannical regime that we're just talking about here? Blair, with the kind of tyrannical regime trying to take over as they are genociding most of us. Another one says, it's always easier to lay down and let whoever walk all over you and then blame them for doing bad things to you. Who told you life would be easy? Do you really think that if you submit to this, that's going to be the end? You don't think they're going to have something else they're going to force you to do? Where is your line in the sand? You better make it now. You better make it sooner. You better start making plans. It may require a radical decrease in your lifestyle. But are you willing to roll the dice? You know, you could wind up with a $1 million lottery, or you could wind up, more likely, with bills that are going to bankrupt you. One lady has now had permanent disability from the vaccine and $1.5 million in debt. She can't work anymore. Her family has to take care of her, so some of them can't work. And she's straddled with a $1.5 million debt for hospital bills. You don't have to be in the hospital very long to be bankrupted by that. So you're going to take a chance doing that? How's that going to work out for you? What else is this employer going to do? Is there any loyalty to anyone by employers anymore? Or will they just fire you on a whim? An employer who will treat you with that kind of contempt for your freedom and dignity is not an employer that you want to work for. And you better start making other plans. It's not a good place. We're not in a good place. I'm not saying that this is utopia. No, it's not. I'm just telling you about the dystopian future that these people have planned and how you need to start making the plans. The sooner you make them, the better. The sooner you start looking at how you're going to be able to feed your family, and that doesn't necessarily mean a job. That means you start making plans on how you're going to start growing some of your own food. You start getting together with neighbors to do some of these things. Let's change gears here and talk real quickly about what's going on with the Southern Baptist Convention that begins tomorrow, the unconventional Southern Baptist Convention. What happened to this? Well, if we don't realize the threats that are coming to us as a society, the threats that are coming to the schools, and we've been completely blind to what's being done to our children, K through 12, and especially college, for quite some time. And now this corruption in the colleges has now percolated down and recycled and magnified. It's like a feedback loop. And it gets more intense as these people come out of the colleges, go back and teach in K through 12, and they begin the propagandizing of these kids at an earlier and earlier age. All of this stuff that is happening. It's destroying our government, it's destroying our institutions, and it's even destroying some of the most conservative Christian churches, like the Southern Baptist. And I think a lesson for this, for everybody, is when you start to create these structures, a lot of this stuff can be traced back to some of the seminaries, in other words, the universities. And the Southern Baptist, just like it can be traced back to universities and society at large. And we see that when we start to centralize things, even in a denominational hierarchy, then it's very easy to take over and to corrupt it from the top down. As the Greeks would say, a fish always rots from the top down. Well, it doesn't. I don't know if that's true of fish, but it certainly is true of societal structures, whether they are political or whether they're some kind of a political structure that we've imposed on the church. And so a good example of this, as this is coming from a Capstone Report, they talk about a couple of woke pastors, one of them in Fort Lauderdale, a guy by the name of James Welch, and another individual in Virginia, David Platt. And both of them have done some of the similar stuff. They brought in this critical race theory, this intersectionality, which some of the more astute people in Christian circles understand the Marxism behind it. They understand that if you're going to start pegging people as racist because of the color of their skin, hold them responsible for what has come before them, that is antithetical to all of our Christian beliefs. That you're going to burden people with not only things that they didn't do, but things that might have been done by previous ancestors. That is not Christianity. Christianity is the removal of your sins as far as the East is from the West. It is the free gift of forgiveness by grace, by the grace of God. You don't earn it. And those sins are not there. They're removed, grace through faith. But these people who ostensibly teach that had now brought in social justice. So this David Platt guy, social justice theology he brought into his church. He has a discipleship course that he calls The Gospel, the Church, Justice, and Race. Let me tell you, the gospel doesn't have anything to do with critical race theory. They're completely opposite of each other. And as a matter of fact, somebody made a comment about the evangelical movement, and that was when they started self-referencing themselves, the evangelical movement. I mean, evangelism as an activity, as a verb, has been around a long time. Simply just as a Latin, good message, EU, good, and angel is just message. That means a good message. The gospel is coming from Old English. It just means the same thing, good message. But that is not a good message. And what they're talking about here is the syncretism of CRT, how it's being brought in. As Capstone Report points out, it is the dialectical process at work. What do we mean by that? Hegelian dialectic. You know, the philosopher Hegel, who put this in, and he predated Marx, so Marx used it extensively, because Hegel hated individualism, hated it absolutely. And Marx adopted his strategy. A key part of what Hegel was about was to reject the idea of absolute truth, which is a big problem for a conservative Christian organization that says that the Bible is absolute truth. You have rejected that. You've rejected the gospel. You've rejected forgiveness. And you rejected absolutes. And so we've seen this now manifest in a lot of different ways. If you don't have any absolutes, what do you have? You have mutability. Things are constantly in a state of change. And so according to Hegel, and then adapted by Marx, you have thesis, and then you have antithesis, and the two struggle, these two exclusive things struggle with each other, and then you get synthesis. And so they're able to move you in a particular direction. Let me tell you what that looks like. It looks like a school system that says we're going to just get rid of all the holiday names. We're not going to call it Thanksgiving anymore. You know, we had a problem because it was Columbus Day, and we got into a big fight because we didn't like Columbus, so we renamed it Indigenous Peoples Day. And everybody was upset about that. Fine, we just won't call it, we won't give any names to the holidays. How about that? Well, I mean, there's still holidays, which actually goes back to holy days, right? Nevertheless, they just say, well, okay, that's fine. We're not going to have any names for any of the holidays. They just got what they wanted. They didn't compromise. These people are using the Hegelian dialectic, always like to present this as a compromise. There was no compromise in that. They created this tension. They brought in something that was new. Right? There is no black and white. There's only shades of gray. Things are constantly changing. So they bring in something new. They say, we're going to rename some of these holidays. People get upset and they say, all right, fine. We'll just get rid of all the names of the holidays. Their intention from the very beginning was to wipe the slate clean of history, of culture, of religion. And they were just able to do that and present it as a compromise. That's what's dangerous about this. And so why is this such a contentious thing right now with the Southern Baptist Convention? They've got 16,000 people. They haven't had that many people show up for decades. Well, because somebody slipped in a critical race theory and intersectionality resolution in one of their political meetings back in 2019 when they had their convention. They were not able to meet last year. And this thing's been percolating. A lot of people objected to it. One of the people who objected to it was Al Mohler. Now, Al Mohler, I've taken to task because of his vaccine idolatry. And it is nothing other than vaccine idolatry to say it's perfectly safe. We don't have to worry about reusing baby parts or the cannibalism involved in the medicine research and the manufacturing of these vaccines, depending on which vaccines you're talking about. They used it for research or they used it for manufacturing or they used it for both. Well, don't worry about that. And this is, the scientists tell us this is great. It's a moonshot. Just take it. And just thank God for this, right? And so I called out Al Mohler on that. Now, Al Mohler was the first one to come back against this critical race theory thing. And then you had John MacArthur, the guy who's out in California fighting this lockdown with his church. But if you look at the seminary and you look at the people who have torn this apart, again, this guy, David Platt, who has got his social justice discipleship course, where does he come from? Well, he comes from the seminary where Al Mohler is president. This guy, Russell Moore, who has really torn up the Southern Baptists over his politics of critical race theory and all the rest of the stuff, who just recently left to go to Christianity Today as an editor. There were so many people that were upset with what he was doing that they were withholding their money. Churches just said, we're out of the Southern Baptist Convention if you're going to hire somebody like Russell Moore. I mean, he could be a staff member for AOC. As a matter of fact, he has been a staff member in the past for Democrats. Where did he come from? He not only was at the Mohler's university, but he was also the provost and dean before he was brought into the Ethics and Religious Liberty Council. So these types of things are coming from the top down. They're coming from the seminaries. And when we look at the corruption of our society, it's coming from that as well. What is the response to this? You've got parents at various schools who are saying, well, we're really unhappy about this critical race theory, and even though we can tell them not to teach it, we don't know if they're teaching it or not, so we want... How about this? How about if we're going to have cameras on police, let's put cameras on the teachers so we can see what they're teaching and have some transparency as to what's going on in the classroom? Well, that's kind of a novel idea. But how about this? I think an even better idea is, you want to talk about defunding the police? Let's defund these schools. Schools are not the same as education. These schools, whether it is a university, whether it is a seminary, whether it is K through 12, these schools have turned against our children. And you need to get your kids out. And we need to defund the schools. Let's make that a cause. Defund the schools. That is the fount of all of this corruption into our society. And the way that they're doing this is with the Marxist Hegelian tactics. Well, I have more to say about this, and I'll probably get into some of this on the radio program coming up. KHNC, start about 5 minutes after the hour. And you can find that at 1360KHNC.com. Thank you for joining us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.